The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's a Wednesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, with echoes of Jim Mora in the background, we're going to tell you what the word playoffs means in terms of this week's NFL board. When we get to the College Bowls on Friday, the last of the Mohicans will end up going to the first on our list. And you remember your old Rock'em Sock'em Robot set? Is there an NBA team out there tonight that really wants to knock another's block off?
Rock'em Sock'em Robot references. I love it, Dave. Yeah. You want a battle here on set? Okay, it's
love
a live
those,
show.
Love those sound effects.
I'm trying. First take on a Wednesday. What did you see last night that you want to talk about?
Obviously something that is not fun to talk about, but we watched the Utah Jazz last night, and we sure hope that you didn't.
Ooh.
And it's something that we're going to have to deal with a lot in this early part of the NBA season. There have been some truly hideous results. The first two Dallas home games, look at Washington at home last night. But was anyone really as bad as Utah? In one stretch, wrapping through the first quarter into the second, the Jazz missed 27 out of 29 shots. 2 for 29. We were trying to look up the worst stretch any team ever had with more than 25 shot attempts. The sources we went to couldn't have it. They had it broken down by quarters, but they had a difficult time doing play-by-play that extended over a quarter. So we got a couple of things that we have to deal with, and we'll do this day by day on the show. When we get these extreme NBA results, in the past, the tendency has been to come right back on a team to rebound from that result. We're going to see in the days ahead if this particular season is going to give us that same type of ebb and flow. Teddy, a beautiful Wednesday morning in Las Vegas. What did you bring in with you?
Well, I'm not going to bitch about how bad the Jazz were last night. I'm not going to bitch about losing a +6 dog in double overtime. No. I got to bitch about my hairdresser today because look at this. I mean, it's a nightmare. I got gray coming in on the sides right now. You should see the back of my – you probably don't want to see the back of my neck. I need a haircut. You know, the guys on ESPN, on SportsCenter, they never seem to look like they need haircuts. They probably have a hairdresser in studio. We need a hairdresser here at the VVN studio because, frankly – I can't get in until Friday. It's like a busy holiday season. I'm told the hairdresser, hey, I'm a big TV star now. She's like, great, I got an appointment for you on Friday. What are you going to do? So I apologize. We'll do our best to keep it contained, get the hairspray out so it doesn't stick up all over the place. But the bottom line is, hey, I got long hair for a couple of days. What are you going to do? Let's shift focus, Dave, because no
Please.
One wants to talk about my hair.
Please, yeah.
And I went on far too long about it already. But quick reminder about the schedule. We're going to do all of the Friday bowls today. We're going to go through all the Saturday bowls tomorrow, and then all the Monday bowls on Friday. I know it sounds confusing, but the key is we have to get through every single bowl game. We want to make sure that we have the information to you in a timely fashion. That's why we're doing it this way. So you'll have all of the bowls through Monday before we leave on Friday. And now, time to shift over to the NFL. Dave, you teased in the open something about playoffs? Playoffs? Tell us about the playoffs.
That was a pretty good Mora. That wasn't bad, unexpected.
Playoffs!
I should have done that in the opening. I can't do that. That's why we passed it. We should have had you do the tease.
I can't do the tease.
Well, let's go to the NFL board. Here's exactly what you need to know in evaluating the teams based on what they have to do coming in on Sunday. We're starting the NFC. San Francisco, real simple. Win and you get the bye, the number 2 seed in the NFC playoffs. That's very significant. New Orleans takes the field needing a win and a San Francisco loss in order to get that number 2. Here's what you got to think about a little bit. If the 49ers break out big early and the Saints are doing some scoreboard watching, there's a chance they could back off in the second half. You won't have Drew Brees out there in the fourth quarter if San Francisco has their game well in hand. So be a little bit careful with that one. Dallas and the Giants meet for all the marbles in the NFC East, but slightly different scenario. Dallas wins, they've got it. Giants get it with a win or a tie. Now, several of the scenarios we'll talk about today do have a reference for what a tie means. This is the only game where we're going to mention it because, first, ties rarely happen. But second, if this game goes to overtime, it could genuinely have a strategic impact. If Tom Coughlin is midway through overtime and only needs a tie to win the division, there are things he may do on the field in order to get that to happen. Dropping down a little bit more, Detroit gets the number 5 seed with either a win or an Atlanta loss. That number 5 is important because if you're a 5, you're going to get the Dallas Giants winner. There's a chance that the number 6 seed is going to have to go to New Orleans, a place nobody wants to go right now. So the 5 definitely matters to Detroit when they take the field. The flip side of that, if Detroit loses at Green Bay in an early kickoff, the Atlanta game, which has been pushed back now, make sure you note the time changes this week, Atlanta will take the field knowing that they have to win to wrap up that 5. If Detroit has already won, Atlanta takes the field with nothing to play for at all, knowing they're going to have to come right back and play again the following week. We've got a good email question saying, should you take a little bit of Tampa Bay plus the 13 now? And it's not a bad idea from a value standpoint, in that if Detroit wins, that 13 shrinks down possibly even to the high single digits. But if Detroit loses, it's not like the 13 goes way up. So you really won't be hurt that much. We'll talk about this game a little bit more on Friday. Your issue is not so much what Atlanta brings, but can Tampa bring enough to support that side of the wager? The one team in the playoffs playing for nothing this week, the Green Bay Packers. Don't know what their player rotation is going to be yet. We'll update that a little more later in the week. But the Packers are all sealed in.
Yeah, and based on the betting markets don't expect Green Bay to be playing a full complement of starters for the full 60 minutes. Let's shift focus to the AFC, and we're going to start in New England, where the Patriots can wrap up home field with a win. If they lose, they still get the top seed if both Baltimore and Pittsburgh lose. Right now, the Patriots, about 11.5-point home favorites against the Buffalo Bills on Sunday. Baltimore will win the AFC North and clinch the number 2 seed and a first round bye with a win or a Steelers loss. They get the number 1 seed if they win and the Patriots lose. Baltimore, fairly short, minus 2.5 on the road at Cincinnati. Pittsburgh, no line yet in their game at Cleveland. Still don't know yet if Marquise Pouncey is going to play. Still don't know yet if Ben Roethlisberger is going to play. That line's not going to be up until later in the week. But the Steelers can win the AFC North and the number 2 seed with a win and a Baltimore loss. They can take the number 1 seed and have home field edge throughout the AFC playoffs if they win and both the Ravens and Patriots lose. Denver, minus 3.5 at home versus Kansas City. They're going to clinch the AFC West with a win or with an Oakland loss, but they don't have any scenario to get in with a wild card berth. The Raiders do have potential to get in with a wild card berth. They're going to win the AFC West with a win and a Denver loss. They also, again, have some wild card scenarios, but they have to win in order to put those into play. Oakland, minus 3 at home against those San Diego Superchargers. Cincinnati will clinch a wild card berth with a win, and they also have some scenarios where they can get in even if they lose at home to Baltimore. Again, they're about 2.5-point dogs to the Ravens at home on Sunday. The Jets, plus 2 at Miami. Betting markets don't expect a big effort out of New York this week. And, of course, they need multiple teams to lose to have a chance. The Jets still have a chance, but it's going to take everything breaking right for New York. They're going to need a lot of help. Tennessee also is going to need a lot of help. They're minus 3 at Houston on Sunday. So the Titans still alive, but, again, they're going to need multiple teams to lose to have a real shot at clinching that final spot in the AFC. And as Dave talked about earlier, the one team in the AFC that has nothing to play for, in the NFC it's Green Bay. In the AFC, it's the Houston Texans who have locked into the number 3 seed. And, of course, that's already reflected in the point spread as the Texans home dogs on Sunday.
So now we go back to the usual caveats here. We had listed a lot of teams that are must win. does not mean must win big. There's no one out there that has to look for a margin anywhere. So when you take some of these teams that are prohibitive favorites, especially like in New England, sometimes these settings actually work against point spread success. If you're the Patriots and you're up 10 in the fourth quarter, you're not looking to get another score. You're looking to finish the game, get it over with, play more conservatively, playing a little bit more to just get it in hand than anything else. So be very careful with this notion that, oh, they must win, they'll go out and play hard. Also keep in mind, too, that when you drop down to the lower levels, to the Cincinnati's of the world, two teams like Tennessee, must-win games don't always work for mediocre teams, teams that aren't accustomed to that pressure. One of the reasons why they haven't already clinched the playoff spot is they're simply not all that good. So sometimes those C to B minus teams don't respond all that well. The notion of playing on a team because they need something has not been a moneymaker in the past.
Yeah, remember, all of these numbers, all of these point spreads have that must-win scenario factored into the equation. This is not a week where the NFL is making, where the NFL numbers are based strictly on power ratings and home field edge. You see all this stuff factored into the spread. So if you're looking for bargains, sometimes you have to think a little bit contrarian in week number 17. Speaking of contrarian thinking, hey guys, where are those emails? Keep them coming. This is your show, and we're going to respond to the questions that you ask, the comments that you have, and the suggestions about things that you want to see and hear. Send us an email, sportsday@covers.com. Again, sportsday@covers.com. You can follow us on Twitter, @VegasSportsDay. And, of course, get involved in the covers.com community. Active threads and discussions going on right now. covers.com/postingforum.
When we come back, we've got big time openers tonight in the Big East and the Big Ten on the college hardwoods. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Hi, I'm Chris Phillips from TalkTales, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And if you stop by the studio, our producer Scott's going to buy everybody a drink.
Okay, guys, let's raise the roof because it's money time! This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's go to Toronto, where tonight we're seeing the Indiana Pacers -4 on the road against the Raptors. A lot of respect for the Pacers in this point spread range. And frankly, we go back to that first take we talked about yesterday, how teams, the things you're supposed to do and the unwritten rules of sports. And frankly, that comes into play when we talk about this ball game, because the last time these two teams met, there was an unwritten rule that was broken by Leandro Barbosa of the Toronto Raptors. Toronto won 108-98, and the game was capped. The final bucket was Barbosa driving to the basket with the shot clock turned off. Instead of dribbling out the clock, Barbosa took it to the hole, got a bucket. The Raptors claimed that they were due because in a previous meeting, Darren Collison had hit a three-pointer at a long three-pointer at the end of that ball game instead of dribbling the clock out. So Toronto thought they were justified in taking that last shot. The Pacers didn't think so. Look at this quote from Danny Granger. Quote, "If I was on him, I would have took his head off and I would have been suspended for a game for a flagrant foul. Stuff like that will sit in the back of your head the next time we play Toronto. If I was on him, I would have taken his neck off."
It's good to bring this up, because as we approach the NBA season, looking for teams that have changed drastically in style, Pacers are interesting right now. You know, what had been a finesse team for a couple of years, a team that was a little bit soft, boy, have they changed. You had Roy Hibbert up front, you had David West, you had Tyler Hansbrough. You got a guy 6'8", Paul George playing guard. You got a lot of wingspans, you got a lot of toughness. That opener against Detroit, as good as it looked for them to win by 12, note that they won by 12 despite West and Granger, their two best offensive cogs, only shooting 9 for 30. They won with defense. They held the Pistons to 36%. They won the boards 53 to 40. This is going to be a tough physical Pacer team this year, one that the markets might have a little bit of difficulty adjusting to off of where they've been in the past. So in a game where they said, look, we want to get tough, we don't like what you did in that last meeting, they do bring that toughness. The only difficulty is have they left us enough room to take advantage.
Yeah, I mean, we saw Toronto look very, very good in the opener against Cleveland. We saw Amir Johnson, Ed Davis, Andre Bargnani, there was physicality in the low post from a Raptors team that's been very, very soft. Jose Calderon played defense in that game, which is something you don't see very often. But as you were talking about, Dave, the question is, this Pacers team's real. They look very much, we're not going to call them a top-tier contender in the East. I don't think they're Miami or Chicago or maybe not even Boston. We'll have to see how the Celtics play out. We look at that next level of teams right there with Philly. Indiana's going to be there in the mix. Unfortunately, bettors seem to have recognized that already. No bargains on the side here. Pacers laying 4. I was hoping they'd be laying 1.5 or 2 in this contest. They're not. No bargains here on the total, hoping for maybe a 197. Nah, 194s across the board right now with Toronto and Indiana. So even though Indiana looks real good right now, looks real good, real good, the betting markets have them priced appropriately.
Let's go to Louisville, a big-time opener in the Big East tonight. Louisville, a 5-point favorite over Georgetown. Cardinals come into the game 12-0, ranked number 6 in the nation. But they're not that. We're likely to find that out tonight or Saturday when they go to play Kentucky. Going to be a good Louisville team eventually. But in that 12-0, there's only one road game, a trip to Butler, you know, where they got a win. And with so many injuries, we haven't seen Rick Pitino get his rotation together yet. Only 2 different players have started in all 12 of those games. Louisville, not quite all that just yet.
The one thing Louisville has brought to the table, as they do every year under Rick Pitino, and I give Pitino a lot of credit for this, man, they're playing stifling, stifling defense. How about this? An assist-to-turnover ratio, they've allowed 124 assists compared to 210 turnovers. They're just shutting teams down. They're not giving up any looks in the paint. And really, the athleticism and size that Pitino has on the outside, they're creating a lot of difficulty for opponents, even getting open perimeter looks. Maybe Louisville's been fortunate. Opposing teams have only hit 59% from the free throw line against them. And certainly some of that has to do with a luck or a bounce factor that you do want to be aware of. On the other hand, some of those free throw struggles may have to do with the fact that opponents have tired legs after they're playing the Cardinal and handling that type of pressure. And when you get to the free throw line with tired legs, you do what the Golden Gophers did last night. You missed a front end of a 1-1 that would have clinched the game in regulation.
You said you weren't going to do that.
Yeah, I'm not bitching about that game. I'm sorry. I'm over it. Georgetown, you know, we've seen this team acquit themselves very well in a hostile road environment already this year. They went down to Alabama. Crimson Tide are good. They're athletic. And Georgetown was able to avoid mistakes and turnovers, come away with a straight-up road victory in that game. Is that a harbinger of things to come tonight, Dave?
You know, it really could be. We talk about Louisville and that defensive pressure because they've had to make that happen. This is not a great half-court offensive team. So if they're not getting you to turn the ball over, their points don't come that easily. So now we go to the flip side of this matchup. Georgetown, number 6 in the nation for fewest turnovers. As Teddy mentioned, when they went out and played Alabama, a team that wants to run and press, they broke that defense down real well because you can do that with veteran toughness. You've got 2 seniors in this lineup, Henry Simms and Jason Clark, Junior and Hollis Thompson, who've been through the Big East Wars. They all average in double figures. We talked about Simms earlier on this show, about the unique abilities he brings. Yeah, he's 6'10", 245 pounds. And it's one thing for a guy at that size to have the scoring and rebounding numbers that he does. 12.5 points, 5.5 rebounds per game. But it's 3.7 assists that really sets him apart. What's the best way to break a press? Throw the ball to a big guy that can handle it. Just go right over top of that press. Let him be that safety valve to get the ball in bounds. Yeah, we're taking 5 here with a team with veteran toughness. We think can be in the hunt all the way. No surprise if maybe Louisville's first loss happens tonight.
Let's go to East Lansing, another marquee matchup as conference season begins. This is a Big Ten battle. The Indiana Hoosiers in East Lansing at the Breslin Center against the Michigan State Spartans. And Sparty Spartan, -6 at home. And this line is a little bit of a surprise. It was actually as low as 4 in some locations at open. And then we've seen some money come in on Michigan State over the course of the past 18 hours or so. But when these two teams played on this floor last year, and again, Indiana wasn't very good last year. Neither was Michigan State, frankly, particularly as the season progressed. And their Big Ten campaign was nothing short of a disaster, point spread-wise. But they go 5-13-1 ATS down the stretch. But in that game on this floor last year, Indiana plus 10.5. Now, they took Michigan State to overtime in that contest. They only lost by a single point, 84-83, the final score in that ballgame. But from a line value perspective, same two teams, last year plus 10.5. This year plus 6. Dave, is that line move warranted?
Well, it sure looks that way. And we say looks that way because Indiana is passing the eye test. When you watch the way the Hoosiers have played, you've seen some awfully, awfully good basketball. You got 5 players averaging in double figures, and Verdell Jones at 8.4, almost the 6th. Cody Zeller, he's been the real deal inside what they thought he was going to be. 15.1 points a game, 7.3 rebounds, shooting 66.3% from the field. With 20 blocks, executing the offense brilliantly, 51.4% shooting, 45.9 from three-point range. Now you go to the defensive end of the court, and we talk about this turnover to assist ratio. There's his dynamite, 218 turnovers forced, only 101 assists allowed. So it's better players, but it's also much better basketball. But there's still that one lingering question in our minds about this Indiana team. They shoot well, they handle it well, they pressure well on defense. But what happens, and of course it's going to happen a lot in the Big Ten over the next couple of months, when the elbows start to fly? Is this team tough enough inside? Because when you go to East Lansing and you're this small of an underdog, you better be able to dish it out.
No question. When we look at Michigan State, looks like a Tom Izzo type squad right now. But Izzo's teams historically have gotten better and better as the season progressed. They tend to peak in the month of March. The other thing that Izzo's teams historically do, they win the battle of the boards. And we've seen it already this year. Michigan State struggled a little bit early in their 2 step-up games to open the season. They played on the one coast against North Carolina, then traveled to the other coast to play Duke. They lost both those games, and they weren't dominant in the paint. Since that time, they've been pretty dominant in the paint. How about this? Plus 10.8 rebounding margin. Again, Izzo's teams year in, year out are among the nation's leader in this department. And of course, defensively, 37.3% shooting allowed, 29.7% from three-point range, and their own assist-to-turnover ratio, well, they've allowed 139 assists and forced 202 turnovers. Defense and rebounding, that's what Michigan State does. Indiana's going to have to be tough and be able to do the same type of things if they're going to win this game, or at least come close enough to cover the point spread.
When we come back, we're going to shift from the hardwoods to the gridirons. It's going to be bowl time starting on Friday afternoon. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
No pressure. Hi, I'm... Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from... Can't think of the name of my damn show. Golf and other four-letter words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Let's go to Friday, an early start action in Dallas. Right now, Tulsa, about a 1-point favorite over BYU. Total in this game is in bet up to 56 earlier this morning. And this is a BYU team that came on strong down the stretch. They were able to close out the season in November. 3 straight up wins, 3-point spread covers. And we've seen this from BYU in the past. They're a team, again, they're a little bit older. Well, many times they're a lot older than the kids that they're facing. The BYU kids that tend to go on missions and then come back and play football in their early to mid-20s, as opposed to the vast majority of college kids who are in their late teens or early 20s. So the BYU teams tend to fare well down the stretch of the regular season where they're bigger, physical, more strong, more in shape, and they tend to wear down opponents. And that certainly has something to do with their late season stretch, but they acquitted themselves fairly well prior to that 3-0 straight up an ATS run when they went to TCU. What happened in that game, Dave?
Yeah, it was the last time they played a real quality opponent. They outplayed TCU on the field, got beat because of a series of turnovers and bad bounces. And we love some of the things we heard about them after that game, saying, boy, we would love for that game to have continued if we just had one more quarter. That was part of the tip-off that said, you know what, they've got a good mentality about them, that that was not going to end their season. Because one of the difficulties BYU faces now as an independent, they're going to have very weak November schedules. It's hard, as an independent, to schedule teams in November who are caught in their conference games. But what did we see happen, even against weak competition, much like a service academy would, BYU had the good discipline. They played hard, they played smart, they kept developing. Now, there's a mentality here that we think might apply in this game, because it goes to the very top that Coach Bronco Mendenhall. You know, what happens when something goes bad? You develop, you work at it. He has that work ethic. He's a defensive coordinator by trade before becoming a head coach. So let's backtrack a little bit to one of the most embarrassing moments of his coaching career. Back in 2007, a trip to Tulsa where BYU gets beat 55-47. See the impact that it might have on this matchup. Here's Mendenhall's quotes when reflecting back on that game. One of the greatest learning lessons of my life. I had no idea how to stop Tulsa. Not only did I not know in the first quarter, I certainly didn't know in the fourth quarter. It was really helpful for us then to get a feel for what that offense was and do some research on it. Mendenhall's first crack at Tulsa in 4 years, but you can bet given his mentality, he's probably coached against this offense in his mind over and over again.
And this is a Tulsa team that really struggled to step up in class this year. They beat all the teams they were supposed to beat. That's what Tulsa has been doing in recent years. But you look at their step up in class games, and again, BYU probably not as good as any of these teams, but still a step up in class compared to most Conference USA competition. They lost to Oklahoma 47-14. At home, they lost to Oklahoma State 59-36. They lost to Boise 41-21, came through the back door in that contest. And at home, they lost to Houston in a game for the CUSA Western Division title. They were annihilated 48-16, a loss that looked even worse after Houston themselves were annihilated in the CUSA championship game against Southern Miss. So Tulsa, in all of those games, struggled with turnovers. -3 versus Oklahoma, -6 versus Okie State. They had 4 turnovers against Boise. They had 3 more versus Houston. All of those games, losses by 20 or more. Golden Hurricanes, again, stepping up in class has not been their strong point.
Let's go to Friday afternoon, Yankee Stadium in the Bronx. And what happens when you bring in a new tier bowl? You're stuck with bad matchups. They're forced to have a bad Big 12 team against a bad Big East team. Rutgers and Iowa State, in this case. Rutgers, a 2-point favorite, line 44.5. Note that they're giving Rutgers a little bit of home field advantage here. It's about 1 hour up I-95 from the Rutgers campus to get to Yankee Stadium. But now here's the issue. 3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, the day before New Year's Day, how many fans choose to make that trip? Is this that big of a deal for them? And even for the players, there's nothing terribly unique. They've already played in Yankee Stadium this year against Army. So even though they're given a little bit of home advantage, did they bring the passion and crowd where it really warrants that in the line?
I'll take the over 1 hour on the drive from the Rutgers campus in Piscataway up to the Bronx for this matchup. Because, again, we're talking about the Friday afternoon on a big holiday weekend in New York. There's going to be traffic. You know, Dave, you love sitting in traffic, and I'm sure anyone who's traveling from Rutgers, and again, most of the kids probably aren't on campus right now, so they're either in the suburbs or in the city. Those kids will probably show up. In terms of alumni, let's just say this game likely to be fairly sparsely attended. When Rutgers played Army on this field, it was about 30,000 in the fans, 30,000 in the stands. I'll take the under 30,000 for this matchup. I don't think there's going to be a lot of fans for either of these two teams. And, you know, we look at this Rutgers team, 12 games into the season. They still don't know who their starting quarterback is. Chaz Dodd or Gary Nova, one a sophomore, one a freshman. Neither one has taken hold of the job. Here's a quote from Greg Schiano, on what the QB situation is. Quote, he will announce just before kickoff. I don't know yet, and it's not being coy. We're splitting reps. They both deserve it. That's another way of saying that no one has taken the job and run with it, right? You can look at it two ways. Rutgers has some weapons. Certainly, Mohamed Sanu is a guy who's going to be playing on Sundays. If you haven't seen him play this year, he's worth watching, you know, watching the game just to watch, see this kid alone. He's been a monster on kick returns, on punt returns. He had over 1,000 receiving yards, 109 receptions this year, 7 touchdowns. If he had some help with the running game, he might even be better. You know, but the running game for Rutgers just did not develop at any point this year. Neither did the offensive line play. They finished 115th in the nation in running. And the top three running backs, again, this is not all just quarterback sack stuff. The top three running backs all averaged 3.8 yards per carry or less.
But Rutgers can play some defense. And against Iowa State, sometimes it only takes just a little bit of that to get the job done. Let's look at this Iowa State season to put it in the right perspective. Yes, they're 6-6. 5 of the 6 wins came by 4 points or less in regulation, 2 of those in overtime. They were 5-0 in that category. What does it tell us? That they were just a bounce away from being 1-11. It could have broken that badly for them. They do have a playmaker at quarterback that's a little bit fun to watch. A young guy, Jared Barnett, good with his legs, but not so much with his arm. If you look at his passer efficiency rating, 100.8, and you look at that Rutgers pass defense, might be very difficult for Iowa State to make things happen through the air. So if there is somewhere to go with this, if you need to have action, we like the matchup of the Rutgers defense against that Iowa State offense and the young quarterback. Rutgers had a lot of blitzing schemes, might be able to unnerve Barnett just a little bit, but a difficult game to play. These are two bad teams going head-to-head, and so many times the issue, when it's C versus C in any sport, you're not really betting on the winner, you're betting on the loser. Because most likely when bad plays bad, it's who makes the mistake to lose the game, not who steps up to make the big play to win the game. We'd rather focus on predicting teams that'll make plays to win than finding teams that are going to make plays to lose.
When we come back, Money Time's going to shift to the Friday Night Bowls. This is Vegas Sports Day.
Regional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Let's go to Friday evening in Nashville. Right now, Mississippi State, about a 6.5-point favorite over Wake Forest. Total in that ballgame, 48. And I have to call it a disappointing season for Mississippi State. I don't think there's any way to sugarcoat what happened to the Bulldogs after all the promise they showed in 2010. A lot of regression in 2011. And you look at their step-up games, not pretty. 1-6 straight up. 2-5 against the spread against other bowl teams, and the only win during that entire span or over the course of the entire season came in overtime at home against Louisiana Tech.
So it looks difficult to want to go and lay 6.5 with a team by this margin all year, but part of us want to do that because we don't like what we see from Wake Forest. Mississippi State is a physical team at the line of scrimmage, and of course one reason why you're going to struggle is in the SEC West, in LSU, Alabama, Arkansas, three teams can end up in the top 10 when all the counting's done. So it was a difficult ride for Mississippi State. But can they control the line of scrimmage enough to win this one? We think maybe they can. The last time we saw Wake Forest, that final game of the season against Vanderbilt, a lower echelon SEC team, Wake was playing at home. Vanderbilt went in and beat them 41-7, outrushed them over 2-1. It was this continuing problem all season for Wake of getting pushed around at the line of scrimmage. The best way to sum up Wake's season, from Jim Groby, a coach we like a lot, a straight shooter, someone who's been awfully, awfully honest. How about this for an appraisal of his team? This is a football team we've got a lot of mileage out of. That's his way of saying, you know what, rubber bands, paper clips, staples. Yeah, we patched together. We won just enough games to get to a bowl, but we're still not very good yet. So, no, the Mississippi State resume doesn't say, yeah, you can go out there and lay 6.5. But the mismatch at the line of scrimmage tells us, just maybe.
And let's not forget that Dan Mullen had his team exquisitely prepared for last year's bowl game. He made the most of those 15 extra practices. You remember, if you had a Michigan ticket in your pocket that day, how bad Mississippi State annihilated that team. And, of course, they've got the same QB this year for that matchup with Chris Relf, who had a big game against the Wolverines last year. He's going to start against here. He was solid in the finale against Ole Miss. And, of course, they have Tyler Russell still available. Not 100%, but at least available for this matchup after his strained MCL in practice just 2 weeks ago.
It's got a Friday night in Tempe, Arizona. Oklahoma, a 14-point favorite over Iowa. Total sitting around 57.5 right now. A lot of issues for Oklahoma coming into this matchup, but we're not sure the market's necessarily addressing them the right way. Down the stretch, boy, did they take some big hits off of that offense. Ryan Broyles, the best receiver in the history of the program, out. Jazz Reynolds, also out. Now, those two combined for 124 catches despite not playing the whole season. A couple of key running backs, Dominic Whaley, who had been their leading rusher when he was injured. Brandon Williams, one of the guys who would have gone into the rotation after Whaley went down. Those are some pretty key guys to lose this late. Yet they're still out there as a big favorite. Part of that because Iowa also lost somebody pretty important.
You think that Marcus Coker means something for the Iowa Hawkeyes? He does. 261 carries, 1,384 yards, 15 touchdowns. Oh, he's suspended for the game. Kirk Ferentz says, no. Violation of team rules. They're ubiquitous at this time of the year. Ferentz is like, bye-bye. Coker, you stay home. We don't need you. Worth noting that no other Iowa running back had more than 18 carries for the season. So whoever the Hawkeyes trot out there to carry the football in this matchup, and believe me, if you've seen their passing game this year, they're going to need some ability to rush the football. But whoever Iowa trots out there to run the football, it's going to be something of an unknown both for themselves and for that Oklahoma defense. Because this Sooners team, again, they were playing for a national title less than a month ago. They got annihilated. Their defense got blown out by Baylor. Their defense got completely destroyed in the Oklahoma State loss. The last three games of the regular season, we're talking about 12 turnovers from that Sooners offense. And all of a sudden, those national championship dreams, well, now they're playing in a pre-New Year's Eve bowl game. This is not what Oklahoma was dreaming about coming into the season. It's worth noting Iowa's going to travel well, as they always do, to bowl games. It's worth noting that Iowa, 5-2 straight up, 6-1 against the spread as bowl dogs under Kirk Ferentz. They've handled these step-up-in-class games very, very well with extra time to prepare.
So can they make the adjustments to play without Coker? It looks like they can because they've got some pieces there that are better than many of us thought at the start of the year, and we saw them unfold, largely because they're pieces that fit in a unique way. Quarterback James Vandenberg, 23 touchdown passes, only 6 interceptions. That's a terrific ratio, largely because they can throw very safe passes where there's a low probability of interception. It's what you do when you have NFL-sized wide receivers to throw to. And we'll give you the stats on these guys, but the most important stat for each is the size. Marvin McNutt, he's 6'4", caught 78 passes this year, 12 of those for touchdowns, 16.3 per catch. And Keenan Davis on the other side, he's 6'3", 45 catches, 4 of those for touchdowns, 14.2 yards per catch. That's awfully difficult for college teams to defend. When your corners are 6 foot and 6'1", and you've got not only the height but the strength differences, that allows Iowa to throw a lot of safe passes deep down the field where they're not going to make a whole lot of mistakes on. It means that there is something they can do to adapt. Yeah, they lose Coker, but when did Coker first come to fame? Last year's bowl on this same field when Adam Robinson, who had been their leading running back, was suspended. Coker goes out, rushes for about 200 yards. He's the MVP and a win over Missouri. So it's not like it's a brand new scenario for Ferentz and his staff to have to adjust for. So having said that, with the markets now pushing it back to 14, if we think they can make the right adjustments, Teddy, where do we go with this?
We go with the play of the day. Absolutely. Waiting for this number to get back to 14. It's at 14 now. Don't know if this line's going to hold. So let's take advantage while we can. Vegas Sports Day, play of the day. That's going to be the Iowa Hawkeyes plus 14 against Oklahoma on Friday night. And that's going to wrap it up for the Wednesday edition. Thanks for watching. Enjoy the games and good luck. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. We'll see you in just over 23 hours.